Hello, I'm Steve Cook with NASA, and you're listening to Weather Brains.
This time on Weather Brains.
November can offer some of the wildest weather of the year.
It's a time when James Spann and his forecast team look anxiously at computer models. One model is already suggesting an intriguing possibility for Alabama.
It would look like, if this happens to be correct, a classic severe weather tornado type thing, followed by a major cold snap and the chance of snow showers or snow flurries.
But before you get excited,
it is pure voodoo at this point, but just something to think about.
Veteran forecaster J.B. Elliott weighs in.
When it does paint a picture like that, you can't just totally ignore it.
Brian Peters on whether forecasting really is improving.
We really are getting better.
Plus, James recalls the dilemma he faced when one model produced a shocking prediction about what would happen 5 days later.
The first thing we thought, what in the world are we going to say on television tonight?
And the model was right. Plus, James posts a picture of Brian on the internet along with an observation.
You look so much like Colonel Sanders in this picture that I think it just really is becoming.
And getting ready for Storm Alert Extreme.
Can you believe this, James? Our third one.
Wow.
You guys have not been run out of town yet. That's pretty good. I'm proud of you. It's all coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, episode number 40 of the WeatherNetcast, put together by the Weather Geeks with the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama. I'm David Black, one of those geeks. With me, James Spann, lead meteorologist and chief geek from ABC 3340, along with Brian Peters and J.B. Elliott. Just a whole bunch of geeks for this episode. Hello, James. What's up?
Hey, it's a great time of the year. I'm telling you, this is just a wonderful, wonderful time. But for those of us in the weather business, we're kind of gearing up toward the fall tornado season, you know, which kind of kicks off this week. So that's interesting to note that we are already in that time.
Getting to be the time of year where you really have to watch the computer models a little more carefully and be aware of impending ominous weather. Speaking of ominous, Brian Peters, how are you? That was cold.
I'm doing just excellently. Enjoying the fact that somewhere in Montana and North Dakota, they've got blowing snow advisories, and we don't down here. It's wonderful.
We're doing well. And hopefully J.B. Elliott is doing well. How are you, sir?
Doing good, sir.
You've been watching, all the winter weather in other parts of the country, too?
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you
Especially Mount Washington, New Hampshire, where they had a gust of 158 miles an hour yesterday.
How much again?
158, their highest wind gust in 10 years.
And that's enough to blow a Yugo right off the top of that mountain.
Yes, and even the Cadillac.
We had a lot of fun talking with folks from Mount Washington on a recent Weather Brains netcast, and it's a fascinating place. I'd like to go up there sometime, but probably you don't want to go up there this time of year.
No.
Probably not. And Colorado's come through a major snowstorm recently, too. Just other parts of the country have really been hammered. So like James said, we're really lucky here in the South.
The national map today, it was interesting to look at the large swath of 60 and 70 degree readings all the way up to Chicago, and I think they were 65 at noon, and all the way over to the mid-Atlantic states. Been interesting today.
And we talked about this on a previous netcast. I don't want to be too repetitive, but James, we discussed on a previous show or two the participation and the contributions from ABC 3340 viewers submitting pictures of the fall colors. The leaves are really changing in not just Alabama, but throughout the South. We've seen pictures coming in from Tennessee, other places, and it's just gorgeous. I'm seeing bright reds and oranges and yellows and purples, and people just have some fabulous photographs to send in thanks to the internet and the era of digital photography, don't they?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, even as we do this podcast, I'm backed up. I probably got about 24 pictures that need to be posted on the blog. So if you get a chance, check it out this week. Some really good-looking stuff. I love the shots I posted this morning from DeSoto Falls and the Little River Canyon, which is a part of Alabama that I think every Alabamian should be required to visit at least once in their lifetime. A lot of people that live here have never been there, and they really don't know how pretty this state is until you get up in there. And this lady from Northport sent in some just amazing shots of the fall colors and the DeSoto Falls, and it's just really stunning up there. So, check the blog. And you can go straight to the picture category if you like and just see the pictures only if that's what you want to look at. And speaking of that, for those of you that are listening that are blog readers, you might have noticed that the whole look is different. We totally revised the platform and changed everything this weekend. And the main thing that's really cool now, David, is that JB's picture is on the front.
And I hope Miss Molly, too.
She is on the front.
All the stars are right there.
That's all right.
Out of all the things we do, I think that's the biggest gripe I've had over the blog, which we launched it formally in November 2004, was that JB's picture was not on it. So if you go to AlabamaWX.com, the first photo you'll see up there is JB and Molly. And what you can do is click on any of those suspects up there. Looks like, you know, mug shots or something, but just click on those heads up there, and it'll lead you to a bio if you want to learn more about the writers.
May be that we need more Miss Molly stories in some of these netcasts, you think?
I think so. But, yeah, we got Bill Murray on there, who's, again, he hadn't had his head on this thing. So, and Brian's mad at me, David, because I put his picture with glasses on there.
I'm not mad at you.
Well, he sent me this email, said, here's a picture of me without my glasses, like hinting, so I'll fix that, Brian.
Thank you. I spend a lot of money on contacts. Excuse me. You look
so much like Colonel Sanders in this picture that I think it just really is becoming.
Maybe you should put the
lights going.
Maybe you should put the Colonel Sanders picture up there.
Yeah.
Colonel Sanders is in the news.
Yeah, something about trans fat, is that the deal?
They're changing the oil so that their chicken is not unhealthy anymore.
Wow.
Well, that's a good thing. You ought to look at all the foods that have trans fats in them, and it is amazing. Not to be a health freak here, but it is amazing how much food has that stuff in it.
They're changing from Texaco to Quaker State, huh?
Well, you've got some healthier choices to make now, and I suspect that's going to happen more with some of the other foods, potato chips and all those foods that are so good that most of us love to eat, but they're really bad for you, right? JB, you're really health conscious now. You've talked about diets in the past. I'm going to pick on you for a second. We kid you about moon pies and all kinds of food, and you just say, uh-uh. Do you just stay away from that stuff all the time?
At the Southeast State Severe Weather Symposium last spring, Mr. Spann took it on himself to force feed me donuts by the dozens.
He even slimmed those things down too.
He would even slip a donut on my table while a program was being on. And one time, he gave me a donut and I didn't want it, and I slung it back at him like a frisbee, and he caught it in midair.
He's cold-hearted.
Food fight.
Yeah. Food fight.
Nothing like acting like seventh graders in a severe weather symposium, you know? I feel sorry for the speaker guy.
You know, sometimes it's a little tough to eat health consciously and avoid that kind of stuff in your business when you guys are doing severe weather outbreaks. You're on the air for 6, 8, 12 hours or whatever the length of time. It becomes difficult to sit down and have a balanced meal, so you probably do wind up having to pork out on a donut or greasy burger or whatever, right?
All those years I was in the weather service, I considered it legal to have unlimited donuts when there was a tornado warning within 50 air miles of Birmingham.
Were those like regular donuts or ice covered or what?
Look at those jelly donuts like Elvis used to eat.
Yeah, we had those too. We had all kinds.
Okay.
I second JB's rule.
Well, now that
let's get a good snow rumor going here. You know, it's about time we do that. What do you say?
Let me ask you something, James. You mentioned in one of the blog posts, and again, for folks who are just listening to us for perhaps the first time, abc3340.com, killer website. Go to the weather section. You'll see a blog there that's unlike any other blog I've seen around the entire area, frequently updated, lots of different people making contributions to it. And in one of those blog posts, James, there was discussion about a possible severe weather outbreak later on. Is that still in the offing, or is that still just way too often voodoo land to get concerned about?
Yeah, this is pure voodoo land, but look, you know the way it works in weather. I mean, I watch these sports talk show guys, and they know if you talk about Alabama or Auburn football, then people will listen. They talk about it year-round, even when it's not football season. In the weather business in Alabama, you talk about tornadoes or snow, and they're going to listen, you know. So I guess I'll throw out this Voodoo Land look from the GFS as of the day we're doing this podcast, which is the day before Halloween.
And Brian's getting his costume ready, but we'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about that in a minute. The GFS is spitting out something at mid-month. Now, we're talking November the 14th and the 15th with a big, dynamic, strong, negative tilt trough sweeping through here. At 200 millibars, you got winds in the core of that thing of about 150 knots and winds at the 500 millibar level over 70 knots, and it would look like, if this happens to be correct, a classic severe weather tornado type thing, followed by a major cold snap and the chance of snow showers or snow flurries the following day. And the interesting analog, and I really need to go back and study this. I have not done that today because of the lack of time, but the immediate analog that I see in my mind when I look at this is the month of November 1989, where at almost that same time of the month, on the 15th of November, we had a setup that looked a lot like that. It produced an F4 tornado in Huntsville that came through the southern part of the city on a Wednesday the 15th of November of 89, with little warning, in fact, really no warning when it got down. And the next day, we were up there doing the midday news live during the middle of the day there, and a big snow squall came through. Hello?
All right.
Sorry about that, guys.
Brian, turn your phone off during the program here.
Okay.
He's just such a popular guy. He's got people calling him all the time.
I knew that Huntsville incident with that tornado was exactly what James was thinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did, too.
But let me ask you something, James. As exciting as that possible computer model projection is, and I say exciting not in a positive way because we wouldn't want that to happen, but as intriguing as it is, what is your confidence in a model that suggests something like that 2 weeks out?
Well, there is no confidence, but I will say this. Occasionally, the GFS will depict something like that, and it just kind of latches onto it, and it can hang in there for a while, you know, and probably it'll disappear on the next few runs, then it shows up again, then it disappears. But sometimes it kind of knows the general idea of what might happen, and that kind of thing could very well. And it's a reminder that, you know, November can offer some of the wildest weather of the year. On that deal in 89, you went from an F4 tornado that killed over 20 people to the next day you were having snow squalls, and I mean, you could literally stick your hand in front of your face and couldn't see your hand. It was snowing that heavily, and the whole thing was surreal. It was just, you know, this F4 tornado damage and this just incredible snow burst coming through there. But that's just a sign of, you know, something that can happen this time of the year. And there is a vast supply of cold air up north. In fact, even as we do this program, I'm looking at the observations in Montana, and I'm not as good as JB on digging these things up, but you got Lewiston, Montana right now with 5 degrees above zero, and a place called Judith Gap. And I have no idea where that is, but it's in Montana, and they're reporting 2 degrees right now. So,
wow.
You know, it has been very cold for this early in the season up north. And, you know, sometimes you can get a big full latitude trough going with cold Arctic air involved in the backside and true unstable Gulf air involved on the front side, which is what like happened in November of 89. So I think the pattern might suggest something like that could happen, but will it? Nobody knows. And it is pure voodoo at this point, but just something to think about.
JB?
And you're absolutely correct, because in the 18Z model run, it's gone.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not surprising. It'll just, you know, and we'll see if it shows back up in a day or two. It might not. It might, but we'll see.
JB, let me ask you a question based on what James is talking about with the mid-November projection here that he was just referring to. You've done forecasting for many decades. What is your outlook on computer models that suggest something fairly extreme like that far out? I take it you look at that with, what's the right term, grain of salt?
Box of salt.
Lots of salt, okay.
Yeah. The whole shaker.
The whole Morton box of salt.
What I'm hearing here is that you're not buying this hook, line, and sinker yet, anyway.
But I'm like James now. With the GFS, it goes out so far, till when it does paint a picture like that, you can't just totally ignore it. You got to at least put it in the back of your mind and check follow-ups in the following runs like Brian just did, because sometimes it can latch on to something, and sometimes in in the fall of the year when you have a major tornado, that means the weather system that produced that tornado was powerful. And it's powerful because it not only has the warm, moist air that produced the tornado, but usually it's sucking in some very cold air from the north, and you can have those follow-up snows.
Well, something I want to ask you guys, speaking of the computer models, when you're looking a long time out, like 2 weeks, and this is a good example, are there very many cases where a computer model latches on to a very long-term scenario and hangs on to it run after run after run right up to the event, or is that not typically what would happen?
Some variations of it, but yeah, it's possible for it to hang on to it, but not too often.
I have noticed, David, in some of the runs with a GFS this year, it will depict the system very clearly 5, 6, 7 days in advance, and it's really got the thing pegged, and then 3 days in advance, it loses it, and then it shows up within 48 hours. So you just have to look for consistency. Some people that watch our weather videos, and we produce a video called Weather Extreme, and the reason we call it Weather Extreme, it's really extreme weather. We're showing you model output and just graphics that we don't show on television. And this up on the blog twice a day and the video page and everything else. And some people say, why do you show that stuff, beyond 7 days? In my opinion, there is no real skill in a specific forecast beyond 7 days. Now, having said that, you'll see some websites that go out 15. I think that's really dangerous. It is pushing it to go out 7 like we do on television and on the Internet. But I do think that you can look for teleconnections. The North Atlantic Oscillation, the Southern Oscillation Index, these kind of things, and then pair that with model output. And if you see something consistently showing up, there's a pretty good sign that might happen. Now, the details you don't know and the timing you don't know, but the more we can give some notice to people like those in the agriculture business, farmers, and utilities that having to crank out energy for major cold waves and heat waves, that information to them is very helpful. And that's the reason I show it on the video. We're just looking for trends and consistencies out there, and I think it helps some people plan that really need to know what's going to happen 2 weeks in advance.
So how much of a difference is there with the computer models today versus looking at an event 2 weeks from now 10 or 15 years ago?
I think the modeling is a lot better. And I'm trying to think, that old MRF, Brian, that thing only went out,
10 days, I think.
It didn't go 15, I know that.
No.
So we didn't have this 15-day stuff. And the other thing, David, too, I think is important, and while people that watch the videos we produce, I mainly just show one model, which is the GFS. Sometimes I'll throw the NAM Wharf in there and some other ones, but the reason you just see one is because of time. It takes a long time to edit those things and get all the graphics together, and Brian knows that because he does it on the weekend. But we're looking at things that sometimes you don't see, like the European global model. It does a pretty good job. And if you see some consistencies in the GFS, the American global, and the European global, the Japanese run one, the Canadians run one, you start to see some really good consistencies in all the modeling out there. That'll be a big help. So there's a lot of information we didn't have 5 or 10 years ago. And while I want to make it perfectly clear, and again, I'll say this, there is no real skill in a specific forecast beyond 7 days. You might have a pretty good idea of what the trend's going to be, at least in terms of rain or, hot, cold, stormy, stuff like that. And that's what people tend to want to listen to that thing for.
The MRF goes out 7 days, doesn't it? And then skews to climatology on the 8th day?
I don't remember the MRF that well. It's funny, David, back when you and I started doing this, we had the short-term model called the LFM, Limited Fine Mesh. Remember that one?
Sure do.
Oh, yeah.
I bet you JB and Brian do, too.
Yes. That's probably extremely primitive by today's standards, right?
Well,
the grid resolution was just horrible on that thing. It's kind of like a PC, 15 years ago compared to the horsepower you have today. The supercomputing that's going on up there, cranking out these models 4 times a day, blows my mind how we have that much computing power to do that. But for, I will say this about that old MRF, David. It really did a good job with the blizzard of 93.
And yes.
I will never forget. I was sitting in the office on Monday. All right, and the blizzard was on a Friday. It started Friday. This was March of 1993. And our old friend Kevin Selle, who is the chief meteorologist now for the Texas Cable News Network in Dallas, who still hangs out with us on the instant message conferences. But Kevin was in the office, and we had this old fax chart, you know, and this old nasty paper that was wet. You guys remember the fax machine?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And you know, the MRF would come down to fax, the DIFAX system, about, 2 or 2:30 in the afternoon. And we saw that thing, and you know, it just made you want to slap your mama. I mean, even if there was a gross error in the, you know, some of those fields, those metrics, you were going to have a big snowstorm. So
what was your first reaction, to say you're crazy?
Well, you know, we looked at each other, and the first thing we thought, what in the world are we going to say on television tonight? Because this thing is 5 days away, and you know how it is with snow in the deep south. Typically, the safest thing to do is don't forecast it, and you're probably going to be right. But I just didn't think we could ignore that. So I went on that night, was pretty strongly worded about it, and you know, the consistency was good, and by Wednesday, you know, the quote we had on television that night, this could be a storm of historic proportion, and then it did happen. But all the credit goes to that MRF, and you know, so, and again, maybe that's why I pay attention to long-range modeling so much. I don't know, but it worked out in that case.
Let me ask you guys something, and this is just from the point of view of the person who is just only interested in, is it going to rain 5 or 6 days from now? Are you still somewhat in the stage of a coin toss as far as accuracy for calling that 5, 6, 7 days out?
I'll let JB answer that one.
No, I believe it's better than a coin toss, David, but the timing is a crucial thing on precipitation 4 and 5 days out, because if the weather system slows down 5 days away, that could mean 3/4 of a day or even a full day that you get an offset on your accuracy on when it began or ended.
So what do you guys tell people who call the television station on Monday and say, we've got an outdoor wedding reception Saturday, is it going to rain? How do you handle that?
I tell them to read JB's blog post.
I tell them to call off the wedding.
Yeah.
Well, it's really funny, David. Your scenario actually occurred to me this past week.
Tell us more.
Well, I got a request from somebody via the ABC3340.com address saying they had an outdoor wedding on Saturday and they wanted to know if they should postpone it. And this was like Monday or Tuesday. And just as JB noted, it was the timing. As it turns out, my forecast to them was very good because it looked like the rain threat was primarily Thursday and early Friday. As it turns out, the rain threat was, you know, ended up becoming mostly Friday, and we did clear out on Saturday, and so it turns out my forecast was pretty good. But if their wedding had been on Friday, it would have been a complete bust because it would have rained on them. And what I told them was actually ended up being pretty good, even though my timing was off in that I said the rain would be ending, you know, early in the day on Friday, and it really didn't end till later in the day on Friday, and so the timing was off. But I agree with what JB said. I think the long-range forecast, while not specifically accurate, as James points out, as JB points out, they are much better than a coin toss.
Well, so we're making progress then.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we are. I mean, typically, 3 years ago when I retired from the Weather Service, I would tell people that the 3 to 5 day forecast is currently about as good as the 2 day forecast was about 10 years ago.
That's about right.
We really are getting better. When you get beyond 5 days, there's still too many variables out there to be specific. And as James is talking about, when you get out beyond 7, and especially out to 14 or 15, I mean, you're talking about 14 days of variables in an atmosphere that's 100,000 feet thick, goes all the way around the globe. You know, you're talking about a huge volume that little changes can occur in. And I'm not talking about that stupid butterfly over in Africa that is responsible for chaos theory. I'm talking about, you know, just little changes here where something speeds up or slows down, and it can throw everything off.
It seems like it hasn't been that long, though, since a lot of forecasters did describe day 5, day 6 accuracy as roughly close to a coin toss, but I'm hearing from you guys that it is getting better and leads me to wonder, where are we going in the next few years? Maybe at some point in a future WeatherBrains netcast, we can look in a little more detail at some of the coming computer models and see what they will be bringing, hopefully.
Back in the 60s or 70s, the Congress threatened the National Weather Service, if they didn't go out to a 7, 8, or 10-day forecast, that they would give it to another agency to do so.
They wow. just wanted the extra days on there, even though the modeling might not have been that ready to produce it. Is
right.
that right?
Oh, I agree, because I was one of those who said we don't need to be going out a week.
It was probably those TV people that forced you to do it at the time, right, Brian?
Well, and it's interesting, even today, you go from market to market. Some markets still only do 5 days, some do 7, some do 10. I'm still one that says when you start getting out beyond the fifth day, you're still getting out into some real nebulous territory, and beyond 7 days, you're really out there in voodoo land, as James calls it.
Well, what blows me away, some of these, I've seen local stations that will do a 10-day forecast on their graphic, and the
wow.
way it works in the television
days?
Weather business, yeah, most weathercasters end the weather segment with a graphic that depicts weather for whatever period they want to choose. We choose 7, but the ones that have 10 out there, that one of the biggest problems, I can't comprehend all that information.
Yeah.
thing stays up on the screen for about, 5 to 10 seconds, and I can't even start to soak that up, even if it's right, and, then you got the accuracy problem beyond 7 days. So I just don't envision that ever happening on my watch. The way I do that, we'll talk about that long-range stuff on the Internet. We'll extend it there. I've got a thing I write on the facts every day, just some long-range thoughts, and we'll put it on the video, Weather Extreme videos. But I just don't see myself doing a 10-day forecast, even if we've got reasonable skill beyond 7, just because of the time issue. It's just too much information.
How long have you been doing a long-term, let me say it again a different way. How long have you been doing a 6 to 7 day forecast on the air, James? Is that since you've been at ABC 3340, or does that go back farther than that?
It started at Channel 6.
That's what I thought.
We never did it at 13. Back when David and I were together at Channel 13, we did a 5-day on our Apple IIe computer.
And day 5 confidence was not very high most of the time.
Yes, it was very iffy for us back then. But a consultant, as I recall, how consultants are, this was at Channel 6, I want to say, around 1990 or 91, something like that. This is about 15 years ago. Said they wanted us to go to the 7-day format. And, I wasn't real hip on that, because back then it wasn't that good, but what do? Your boss tells you to do it. So it's been about 15 years since I've been doing the 7-day on television, and now people have gotten used to it, and always try and allow enough time at the end for people to stare at it and pick out whatever days they want to. But again, the beautiful thing about the Internet now, if they miss it, they can just go on the web and find it there. We've got all the writing and everything too, so it's a lot better now.
It's a wonderful thing.
And one of the things I've found, David, is, and I've made the transition from the government weather service to James's side of the fence over here, and that is, most weathercasts are only, if they're lucky, 3 minutes. And I don't want to spend my 3 minutes talking about what's 7 days out. I think a lot of people are much more interested in what's happening in the next 2 or 3.
Right.
And you've only got so much time when you're on a television newscast, and they're in your ear telling you to get off the air if you go beyond the time limit they've allotted.
Well, yeah, and I'm kind of saying the same thing, but when I think about the blog, you guys have so much space and time to go into whatever detail you want to go into about a given weather situation. I think back to the days of J.B. Elliott National Weather Service Radio in Birmingham, and I'm so glad that you're posting, J.B., on the blog, and I see frequently numerous posts within just a couple of hours' time on the blog, so that's kind of the more modern, contemporary medium, and I'm glad you're there, and I know that you guys, based off the email you get, realize that people are taking that information in and making good use of it.
And I sure do like the new design of the blog that James came out with yesterday.
Yeah, looks slick.
That was a big process over the weekend. I did that for a number of reasons. Number one, we were starting to get too many spam bots. For people that run a blog, they know what that is. These are these robots that come in there and put all this nasty comments, and it's typically links to gambling sites and, you know, pornography and stuff like that. And they were getting around our verification codes. So this new system, I think, has a really easy way of beating those while enabling people to openly comment on our blog posts without having to put in verification codes. And also, it's more scalable, and it's going to get us ready for the next 10 years. But that blog is a crucial part of what we do.
I've noticed today that in the comment section of the new design blog, there are people that are posting there that I've never heard from before. New names.
Right. And I'll be the first to admit, I've even had a hard time with those verification codes. You know, and those are weird-looking letters and numbers, right, to try and defeat the robot so they can't get in there and, you know, pick it up automatically. And I think we'll see a lot more participation now for people in the comments section, too. And there's a few glitches, but I'll get them fixed. One of the first things I noticed today, the author wasn't showing up. And somebody on there said, man, I haven't seen anything from JB all day, where he actually had posted something. So we got that fixed. But
it takes a little bit of time to get the bugs out.
We're using WordPress. For the geeks out there, there's a lot of blogging scripts, and WordPress is probably the most universal, and it's very robust with a lot of themes, and
it's customized.
It really is. So we've gone to WordPress, and I think it's going to be a good experience.
Congratulations on a change for the better. Before we wrap up, James, an important date coming up within just a couple of weeks that folks in North and Central Alabama need to know about. November 11th. Can you tell us why that's an important day?
I bet you Brian Peters can.
Let's put him
to the
test.
Show.
Oh, that's right.
Not the car show.
Oh. Storm Alert Extreme. Can you believe this, James? Our third one.
Wow.
You guys have not been run out of town yet. That's pretty good. I'm proud of you.
And actually, I've heard a lot of discussion about folks that are going to be coming that way. It's our what has become our annual training for storm spotters, and I'm not going to say what James Spann says, but I did train about 6,000 or more spotters while I was with the Weather Service in Central Alabama, so Central and North Alabama, I might add. So I'm going to be doing my basic and advanced spotter training, and we're going to be talking about IMing, and besides that, somehow or other, I think James has worked it out where we're all going to get into the car show too. So
that's Saturday the 11th, Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center, right?
Yeah, it's right. It's downtown, and our friends at the Birmingham International Auto Show, the Birmingham Automobile Dealers Association, they have really gone out of their way to work with us and to be a partner, and we're just excited that they're on board with us. And Brett McBrayer and his folks have done a great job, and they've got us set up in a nice meeting room, and all of our sky watchers that can attend, they'll be there for training. And if you love weather or want to learn more about tornadoes and severe storms, this is a teaching thing. You know, the show we do in February, it's more of a show. This is teaching, and it's really cool. And even if you've gone through basic Skywarn and advanced Skywarn, you need to be trained every year. So don't let that be an excuse. So it doesn't cost a dime. You don't have to register. You just show up. Again, that's November 11th at the BJCC. We got details on the website, too. You can check it out. But I know of one guy, David, that's coming in from north of Atlanta.
I'm not surprised. It sounds like it's a very well-run operation. So I suspect you guys are going to have a good turnout for that. So just what do people who've already attended previous sessions think of Storm Alert? Well, Helena's Nathan Jones is an ABC 3340 viewer and follows the weather very closely. Nathan, you've been to Storm Alert in the past. What was it like?
It was very interesting. A great time. Learned a lot about storm spotting and so forth, and I'd highly recommend it to anyone.
For somebody who's just starting out in this field, does it give some fairly good basic instruction, in your opinion?
I really think it does. Like I said, I'd recommend to anyone starting out, and even somebody that's been there for a while.
You going to go to more of them in the future?
Yes, definitely so. In fact, I'm looking forward to the one coming up in a couple weeks.
That's Nathan Jones from Helena. James wanted to ask you one thing. Did you get straight with Brian about his little plan? He's not to charge people admission who show up for Storm Alert. Is that clear now?
Yeah, we've tried to get him straight on that. His latest scheme, Brian's going to come early in a tux and try and park cars and get some tips that way. So, you know, there's always some profit scheme in it.
Oh, man, he just never stops.
I will mention that it's important for everybody to bring $8 for lunch, though, because we will have lunch there, apparently, but it's...
Cracked crab and lobster, is that right?
Yeah.
I doubt it.
Lobster tail. Hey, speaking of that, while we're... I know we're about to close the show here. I just got a note from Old Shoe. I don't know if you guys are on this distribution list or not, but... you know, John is like trying to get him down for one of these shows. It's hard to do because he travels a lot.
Never heard of him.
Selma, Illinois. I don't even know where that is.
Maybe, is he running from the law?
He must be, but he apparently is on a pheasant hunt, and he just shot his first pheasant. So Old Shoe sends us a picture of this dead bird.
Please don't post that to the blog.
No. You know, I thought, well, we'll put... Typically, when John travels, we'll put the pictures in the blog, but I think I'm going to pass on this dead chicken or rooster, whatever this thing. What is a pheasant? I don't even know what a pheasant is. But he took one out. There's no doubt about that.
There's one less pheasant flying around because of John Oldshoe.
Yeah.
Send your email to Oldshoe. Never mind. All right. Anything else, guys?
I wanted to mention one thing. You know, one of my biggest gripes over the years, and it's not a complaint because I fully understand the cost of it, but the National Weather Service only sends up weather balloons every 12 hours, twice every 24 hours. And I have often wanted to have them every 3 hours or something like that. But here's something that was in USA Today. NASA and the National Weather Service are using high-tech sensors on some U.S. passenger planes in an experimental program that could replace the traditional method of the six-foot helium balloons. And the new sensors measure weather conditions every few seconds while planes are flying. In the early test, forecasters detected tornado-like conditions earlier and predicted heavy storms, temperatures, and fog more accurately. We've already seen a significant improvement in forecasting, said Rich Mamrush, a government meteorologist in Green Bay. He's used data from that to predict storms around the Great Lakes. And the new program, and it's still unclear whether the Bush administration is going to fund it or not, is called TAMDR, called Tropospheric Atmosphere Meteorological Data Reporting.
Wow, interesting. I wonder if they'll be able to get enough data to make that work on a wider scale. Have to follow it and see.
Yeah, as many aircraft is flying all the time, I would think so. You know, James has always mentioned the fact that it's so difficult to forecast clearing behind a cold front down here at certain times. And I believe if we had a constant pressure chart, you know, we have the 850 millibar, 500, and so forth. I wish we had a 950 millibar chart, which can give you hints of little pressure troughs and temperatures and how the dew point's dropping at just a few thousand feet off the ground, and I believe that would be a good key to determine how quick it clears.
Sounds like JB's adding to his Christmas wish list.
Well, I tell you, he's all over it. That's some good stuff. I wish we would. And he's right about the upper air soundings, too. That, David, is the biggest limiting factor, in my opinion, and how far you can take computer modeling, because, you know, getting the upper air, you know, data once every 12 hours, that's just not good enough. When you start getting more, you know, better detailed, more frequent upper air data, I don't know if the models get any better, but if you can get that, I think they will get greatly better.
If you guys get a chance, throw that article JB just read up on weatherparty.com, can you?
Yeah, well, if JB will send me the link, we'll do that. And I wanted to plug one thing, David. We did a special on ABC 3340 this past Sunday night called The Decade of Alabama Weather. We have been here 10 years, which is hard to believe. The station signed on the air in September of 96, and Bill Castle, the great video legendary editor, put the whole thing together. And if you want to see that, we've got it up on the web now. Go to abc3340.com and then weather and click on video and go down to Weather Vault. We got a pile of stuff on there, but if you missed it on television this past Sunday night, it's up on the web now, both QuickTime and Windows Media. So
that was excellent, by the way.
Yeah, Bill did a great job with that. So it's just a little snippet of Alabama history. So it's up on the web if you want to watch it.
Good deal. We'll check that out. If you'd like to contact us here at Weather Brains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. If you'd like to leave a voicemail on our voicemail line, that number is 206-339-5482. 206-339-5482. 239-5482. And a little reminder that the opinions you hear expressed here on Weather Brains are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. They're the opinions of the weather geeks right here on Weather Brains. I'm David Black. On behalf of James Spann, J.B. Elliott, and Brian Peters, we do thank you very much for listening and hope you can join us again for the next episode of Weather Brains. Weather Brains, copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Adios. Guys, good show. Enjoyed it. Thank you all.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. See you, boys.
Be good.
Try to stay out of trouble. Bye.
And jail.